Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
President Obama visits Japan as the world's economic future hangs in the balance. For Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison, in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. President Obama and other world leaders are in Japan today for the G7 summit. BBC Asia business correspondent Karishma Vaswani is there as well. Hello, Karishma.
Good morning.
So what are the most pressing economic issues that these world leaders are discussing today?
At the very top of the agenda is how to fix the global economy. There are two camps in this particular summit. On the one hand, you've got Germany and the United Kingdom, who are of the opinion that fiscal austerity and structural reforms are very much the way to go forward. In the other camp is host Japan. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe believes that you need to throw money into the economy and cut interest rates to get companies and consumers spending again. It will be interesting to see what approach each country decides to take as they deal with their own individual economic problems.
A hot topic here in the States is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's the trade deal between the U.S. and Asian nations. President Obama just talked about free trade in his news conference. What's the discussion around TPP at the summit?
The discussion is whether or not it will actually get through the corridors of power in the United States. On the one hand, you've got President Obama saying that this is a really crucial deal for regional security and boosting regional growth. But of course, the big elephant in the room, the second largest economy in the world and the most significant in Asia, isn't in the deal, and that's China. There's a great deal of sort of attraction in the deal, and Japan is very keen to push it forward as well. But at the same time, there's some trepidation about what the exact approach is going forward.
Okay, the BBC's Karishma Vaswani at the G7 summit in Japan. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for having me on the program.
A Citigroup report paints a grim picture for retail banking jobs in the future, with shrinking opportunities for would-be tellers and other bank branch workers. The report predicts about 800,000 fewer bank jobs in the U.S. by 2025, fewer local branches, too. Those numbers follow a downward trend since the financial crisis hit. From the Marketplace desk at OPB, Mitchell Hartman reports.
The Citi report says the main culprit for this predicted 30% downsizing will be fintech, new technology like online banking and peer-to-peer lending.
I don't think anyone in banking thought their job was all that secure.
Karen Petru at Federal Financial Analytics says banking without a live teller helps banks because paying for people and real estate is a big drag on profits. But she's not sure fintech will replace all of those fin workers.
Asking about a new product, and that's where bank profit is often better done in person.
Jennifer Tesher at the Center for Financial Services Innovation says banks already don't have enough branches in poor and immigrant neighborhoods, and more downsizing won't help. But
a lot of the technological shifts that we're seeing are actually a positive thing. Think of the balance alert,
delivered by cell phone, helping low-wage workers avoid steep overdraft fees. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio here. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We give you the context we think you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. Some context on us: we are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org.
When Pixar's Finding Dory comes out next month, it'll mean hundreds of millions of dollars for Disney. The animated film could also bring a big payday for the aquarium industry, as fans decide they might like a fish of their own at home. But when a particular kind of fish gets a star turn, it's not always good for the species. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Jed Kim explains.
Remember that little blue fish in Finding Nemo? What's it called?
Hi, I'm Dory.
Hi, Dory.
Well, Dory is the character's name. The fish species is called, well, actually it's called a lot of things, but mostly it's called a Pacific blue tang. It's a popular aquarium fish. Andy Ryan, a marine biologist at Roger Williams University, says 100 to 150,000 are brought into the States every year. Ryan's worried that number will jump after June.
When you make an animal charismatic, adorable, and just as cute as it is with Ellen DeGeneres, you know, his voice on there, there's nothing you can do to stop people from wanting to, you know, keep that as a pet.
He says there have been anecdotal reports of demand for clownfish jumping by more than 30% after Finding Nemo came out. Others disagree. Sandy Moore is president of Seagrass Farms, which imports and distributes fish.
We didn't see any increase in the demand for Oscillaris or Pakula clownfish at the release of Finding Nemo. We did see an increased awareness overall in aquarium keeping.
Moore says the industry's not anticipating a run on blue tangs. That's important because each of those that gets sold was captured from the wild. And in hotspots like Indonesia or the Philippines, fishermen have been known to use destructive techniques. Efforts to breed blue tangs in captivity are nearing success. Judy St. Ledger is president of Rising Tide Conservation.
I am hopeful that we potentially could have the first rearing of blue tangs in 2016.
Even so, simple economics will likely keep wild capture in play. Andy Ryan says growing tangs is so challenging and expensive, they'd need to sell for $300 to $500. Right now, they go for $60 to $80. In the meantime, other factors may keep them from getting too popular. One is their size. Sandy Moore recommends an 8-foot-long aquarium.
And it's a long-lived fish. It's a real investment.
Oh, how long do they live?
I believe up to 50 years.
That's a lot of fish food. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
And finally, one of the most expensive places on earth to smoke is about to get even pricier, to $20 a pack. New Zealand's new economic plan calls for a massive tobacco tax hike. The 46% increase pairs with the government campaign to get more New Zealanders to quit smoking. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.